See, I guess by the time you graduated from high school, the Fairbanks High School or community school was built. Would that have been Old Main on Cushman?
Yes. That's on Cushman, what's there now.
Yeah, with the boarded up windows.
But with the boarded up windows. Of course, it was after I graduated, it was has been added to a lot. And like the big gymnasium on the back and some of the things that were in there. But that is the replacement I graduated from.
What
in
year?
35.
Oh, I was going to say what year did you go?
1935.
And what did you do after graduation? Did you go on to school or did you work for a while?
No, I went on to school. I went to school that fall. I went to college.
This would be university?
University of Alaska.
Now, at that time, didn't it have the big long name?
Alaska Agricultural College and School of Mines.
I bet you were glad when they shortened
it. Shortened that. We probably called a lot shorter before that. I don't know for sure.
Yeah, because that first name was quite a mouthful. Now, I guess as a town girl, you commuted back and forth by Brill car?
Well, actually, by the time I was in college, it was by bus. But they had commuted, and I had gone out to different things at the university, that we went out on the Brill car, and there was a little shack or place you got off, and then you walked up the hill.
Mm-hmm.
And we went that way, just now and then. But we went mostly by bus. And the bus, at the time my sister first started, Paul Griman was the one that ran the bus all the years that I went and all the years that she went. But he used to come further up Cushman, but by the time I got to going to college, he picked us up on 2nd Street. But he was very good about one thing. He would, if we were a little late getting there and we all knew one another who was going down the street, and if so-and-so hadn't come along to get on the bus, well, they'd say, oh, she's just behind me. And he'd sit there and wait until you got there. And then we'd go out, and many times, and well, in fact, my memory is most of the time, sometimes we couldn't get up the hill and in the bus. Sometimes the bus would go up to the main building, but sometimes it didn't, and then we had to walk up the hill.
Mm. It was just too slick because of the ice?
Yeah, mm-hmm. To go up the hill.
So did they have a staircase at that time, or did you walk?
They had a staircase.
The one that's or in the same location, I guess, is there now?
Well, pretty much. It mm-hmm. just came down to the road.
Yeah, it was,
well, we used to slide.
Down.
We slid. We'd get to the top of the, walk across the campus and then come to where that we had to go down the hill, and we'd sit down and slide.
You must have had on ski pants then.
I got on the bottom a lot. I had a mouton fur coat, and it was long. My dad had gotten it for me, and he told me that he knew I was going to grow, so just put my shoulders up and catch my coat and hang on to it. And I used to sit down in my coat, and some of the other girls would sit on my lap, and then someone on their lap, and they'd go on down the hill.
Yeah, you must have worn off the fur.
Yep. Dad says, what are you doing?
That's what you'd call hard wear.
Yes.
I guess everybody who went to school in those days has a Dr. Bunnell story. I'm sure he knew everybody on a first-name basis. What are some of your recollections of Dr. Bunnell?
Well, all the town girls would probably have the same recollection. His office was across the hall from the town girls' dressing room, and we'd go there. And, of course, it was cold, and in the winter, and we had to wear ski pants or some such thing to keep warm. And we'd go in, and then the class, it'd be time for classes to start, and Judge Bunnell would not let us go to class with pants on, slacks. And as you'd go out the hall, if you thought you were going to sneak by a few times, why, he was watching out his door, and he would say, "Bobby, where's your skirt? Go back." And you went back, and you were supposed to keep the skirt in your locker. And so not having a skirt there to change was no excuse.
Didn't matter how cold it was.
No. You could take your pants off. We wore slacks under, you know, different. Underneath mm-hmm. it, or you had to have heavy leggings or something because you'd get so cold.
Yeah.
Because the bus was not warm when you got on it. It was after Paul ran it and made a few trips, but it sat out all night, so it was cold.
Cold as the outside temperature.
Yes. So it was. You really had to have something.
Yeah, seats must have been pretty hard and cold to sit on.
Yeah. So you had to have a. And I don't know why he was so determined that you were not going to wear slacks or ski pants or anything.
And I can remember having that problem when I was in school. There was no excuse for wearing pants. You're a girl, you dressed in dresses. So I think it took my children's generation to overcome that. Because they never wore dresses to school. Always pants. Regardless of the temperature.
They still do, don't they?
Who were some of your professors? First of all, what did you major in college?
Well, I started out and took quite a bit of science and that, and math and that. But when Lindy and I decided we were going to get married as soon as I was through college, I knew I couldn't teach. I took enough education to teach, and I had a teacher's certificate, but a woman married couldn't teach.
Oh, you couldn't get a job teaching?
No. And so I finished in, I did practice teaching in home economics.
With
Lola Tilley. Mm-hmm. And actually, it was with...
Lydia?
Lydia Von Hansen, no. After that.
And there was Ann Walsh.
Paulson. What was her first name? She married a man by the name of Wooden. And Judge Bunnell made quite a big joke about it all the time that you're going to take Wooden money from now on. But she comes up here every once in a while.
Mm-hmm. So I guess Lola Tilley would be about the only one who lives in the Fairbanks area that would have been a professor when you were there.
That lives here now, you
mm-hmm.
mean?
Yes, lives in Fairbanks. I think, Odessa Nordale taught for a while, too.
Well, she taught in the high school.
Oh, not in the college. I thought she was.
Well, she might have taught in the college some too, but she taught in the high school. Because she was teaching in the high school when I was in high school, Lodessa.
Oh, did you have her as a teacher?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I had Lola Tilley. Some of the. Trying to think of the teachers, and it's hard to remember back so many years.
Yeah, it's been a few years.
It's been a few years. But
did you work? I know Dr. Bunnell oftentimes found jobs for students who needed to earn money during the school year, either jobs on campus or perhaps during the summer. Did you ever work through him?
No, I never did. I never, actually, when I went to college, I didn't work.
Mm-hmm. Well, you have enough to do to study. I think so. Working just complicates it, makes it a little harder.
In the summertime, I worked some, but not...
Not during school.
Not during
school. What type of work did you do in the summer?
Well, different things. I went One year I went to Paxson's and waited table.
Oh, Paxson Lodge.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, nice I did place. That for one summer, and there was lots of tourists and that would come in and be astounded that we could speak English.
A lot of misconceptions about Alaska, I bet you had to correct.
Lots of them. Well, we got so that we thought it was funny, and we teased a lot and said, yeah, we can't only say a few words.
I say, I bet you made up some good stories, too.
Yes.
So you graduated, what year from the university?
39.
39.
And got married that summer.
Summer.
Mm-hmm. And then I worked. I eventually worked at the base quite a while.
Oh, at Ladd Field.
At Ladd Field. Mm-hmm.
During the Second World War.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What type of work did you do there?
Well, I started out by doing filing in the quartermaster office. And then eventually I was secretary to the quartermaster.
What was his name?
Bill Hammond was the one, and Desiderot was one. But and then I changed and went into the auditing office, and I audited books.
So I guess Dale Gaffney was the commander at the base then. Did you know who he was? Or I guess it was small enough that people knew one another, at least by sight.
Oh, yes. I've talked to him many times. He used to come in the quartermaster office, and I knew him.
Mm. You had a great story to tell about one of your bosses, wasn't it, Desiderot?
Yes, Desiderot was in the office. He was next to Hammond, and he didn't like to fly. Hammond liked to go off on hunting trips and that, but not Desiderot. But Desiderot finally got coaxed into it one time, and he got on the plane, and they flew down to get some sheep and stuff, and they were coming back when they were all ordered to bail out. They were having engine trouble, and the thing was that they hadn't put on the equipment they should. They had on just, it was the middle of the winter, they had on Oxfords, just dress shoes. And they didn't have their parachutes on. The parachutes were on the plane. And two of the men got the parachutes on and jumped. And then the pilot got the motor going again or whatever. And he said, you don't have to bail out. But we better look for those guys. They'll freeze. And so they flew round and round and round looking for the ones that had jumped.
The two men that had jumped
out. And actually, they bailed out over the Alaska Railroad. Train would go by once a week, and they were picked up within about 15, 20 minutes the train.
Isn't that a stroke of luck?
And they brought them into Fairbanks, and they were on the base when the plane landed. And Desiderot was on the plane, and he came into the quartermaster office, and he had his parachute with him. He wasn't one that jumped. And we had to tease him because he had always been so afraid. And he says, just don't say anything. We didn't find the two men that bailed out. Well, we knew they'd already gotten in.
Oh, you weren't going to tell him right away.
No. He said, never again was he going on a hunting trip by air.
So that fixed him. Now, during the war, was your husband in the military? Did he get drafted?
Mm-hmm.
So is he stationed at Ladfield?
Yes. When he first went in, they said that he would not be stationed at Ladfield all the time. He did his boot training.
Oop.
He did his boot training, and he at Ladfield. And actually, he never did leave Ladfield. He was here all the time. He had a permit that says he got teased about a lot. Said he was it was all right for him to live off a base with his wife Barbara, but they put the wife's name right on the on the pass for all of them. And he was he worked different places. He worked in the commissary, not the the PX.
PX.
Yeah, in the PX.
And that would be the grocery store.
No.
So he worked in the...
He worked in the PX, and he had worked in the post office downtown here. Before, when he first went in the Army, I was working in the post office downtown, and then I quit that and went out to the base, and they took him and put him
in the post,
in the post office downtown.
So he was following in your footsteps.
I guess. And but he had worked in the post office years before for a short time, and so they put him in the post office. But he worked in the PX for quite a while, and he was here all the time. He never was transferred out. Mm-hmm. My sister's husband was transferred into Canada, but not Linda.
So that was fortunate to
have
him here for the duration of the war. Yeah. So you lived in this house?
No. We lived, it's odd, we lived in the house down on Wendell Street. They have taken it out of there now. But the same man built it that built this house.
This house, oh.
And later, why we... bought this house. We had gone into the store at that time, and we bought this house because it was close to Mother and Dad, and my father was in bed for 5 years with a bad heart condition. And we had to go when his fire needed fixing and all this, we had to go all the time. My younger brother, my sister and I, we changed their heating to oil, and we changed their cook stove from wood to and coal to electricity. And my dad had a fit. He thought that was terrible, and he says, "You'll never have electricity when you need it, when you're going to have a big bunch here like we do for Thanksgiving and Christmas and that. It's going to be terrible. Your mother's going to have an awful time. I don't want you to do it." Well, he was so sick, so we went ahead and did it. And wouldn't you know, the first Thanksgiving after we put in electricity, the electricity went out when we put the turkey in. So we were late into the night.
Well, there were quite a few power outages, even when I first came up here.
Yeah.
So he was right on that score that, there are times when you can't depend on it, but fortunately it's pretty good now.
And then we took we had a coal furnace, and we took the furnace and put oil.
Yeah.
Because that was, who was taking care of all the clinkers and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when you're working full time and running your own house, it's a lot to take on another one, even if it's next door.
Well, we weren't next door then.
You were in New Wendell Street.
Wendell Street. We had quite a ways to go.
Oh, so that was, yeah.
And then we were in Wendell Street. We bought this house, actually, just before our first child was born. And my father died about 2 weeks or a month before. It was even longer than that before we moved in, but we signed all the papers and bought the house, and we knew we were going to be here. It was because Dad couldn't do anything, and he died before we actually got moved in.
Oh, so you didn't get to be next door neighbors after all.
No, we were next door neighbors to Mother after Dad was gone. And she eventually came and lived with us. She lived with us from the day our oldest daughter was born until she was married.
Oh, some 20 years or more. Mm-hmm. I was going to ask you about Lindy's stores. He was in the grocery business at one time, working for, did you say, Piggly Wiggly?
Yes.
And then you had your first store, I guess, probably just after the war.
Well, yeah, I was still working at the base, and that when he got out, he had worked for Lazy's before he went in the Army. And then when he got out, he worked for Alaska Market for a short time, and then we bought this little store, which was a quite small store, which was on 4th Avenue right off of Cushman, and we later bought the building we were in for so many years, and
this is
on Barnett.
Lindy's grocery store,
and then we had one in college, too.
Mm-hmm, I remember that. Used to buy a lot of canned goods. The line of canned goods were wonderful. I think it was the beans that I liked.
The beans.
String beans. So Lindy's and Fairbanks opened about 1947 or so?
46.
46. And then when did you have the college store also?
I always forget the date that we
went in,
but that was later. We had, we didn't have any children. Kay was born the first year we owned the town store, and Jan was old enough to remember when we bought the college store.
Mm-hmm. And you did a lot of bush
orders.
So what all would that entail?
Well, it would then, they would write in their orders. Eventually, they got so they called in, but to start with when we did it, they didn't have phones in all these little villages. And they would write their orders in, and we would pack them and send them to them.
By bush plane?
By bush plane. We'd deliver to the airport.
And then bush pilots would take it in, and then how did they handle payment? Did they?
They usually sent, until we got to know some of them who did have accounts then, but to begin with, they sent money with their order, and where we got started on it was through the Northern Commercial Company. They had a grocery store at one time. There were Nordstrom's.
Oh, yes.
Was. And when they went out of business in the grocery business, they gave us their accounts. And so we had a good reference.
So you had
on all the
customers and good clientele.
And it was, if it turned out to be somebody that they hadn't served and that we didn't know, why then we'd write and tell them how much it came to and with the shipping and everything, and they'd send us some money.
Prepay it then. Mm-hmm. So what villages did you usually serve? Mostly on the Yukon, like Fort Yukon and Beaver and some of those?
Fort Yukon, Beaver, Anitubic Pass. I had a map. I got it someplace that showed all the places we had sent.
Serviced. Mm-hmm. Did you ever get up into some of those communities?
Very few. We didn't. They wanted us to come and everything, but it was just hard to
run the store here
and get there. Of course, we always had employees. Like we had Mr. Fuller, Joe Fuller, who worked for us for a good many years, and Don Kirshner, the one that comes in here, he's worked for us for quite a while. He was raised in the house on the corner here and was always, even as a little kid, around. And then he worked up on the slope for some time, and then eventually he came back and he worked for us.
I remember, particularly in this store, the Fairbanks store, you had some masks for sale, the Anitubic Pass. What is the story behind those that you got into selling these masks along with your groceries?
Well, a lot of them had money problems, same as all of us, and so we used to take them and sell them. We'd buy the masks from them, they could send them, and we would send them groceries.
In exchange for the
masks. In exchange for the masks, and then we sold the masks.
Oh, that's...
And there was quite a few natives that would send them in.
So you had some that were pretty steady in terms mm-hmm. of supplying you with these masks, mm-hmm. and then, of course, it took care of their groceries at the same time.
At the same time. But we had one for a little while. We had one little problem. They had, someone had come to town and seen these artificial eyelashes and stuff, and the next bunch of masks we got had artificial eyelashes on them and everything, you know, and, which wasn't what we wanted at all. And Lindy sent them back to them and said, you can't do that.
We'd rather have caribou eyelashes.
We want them just like you always did them, not taking this stuff. They got some lipstick and some...
Oh, dear. It looked like a Halloween mask.
Yes.
And the mask making, I guess, was something fairly late that they developed doing. At least that's what I'd heard. It's not something that was part of their culture for many, many years.
No, they did it for quite a few years, but they... Actually, there was some teacher or something who went up there and
got them started on it. Well, certainly, even now, you see very nice masks, and they're, you know, that just is an anecdotic mm-hmm. past trademark. That, you see those, and you know immediately what they are. And I have one. Somebody gave it to me as a gift. Might have come from your store.
Might have. We sold a lot of them. We kind of quit when, in the last few years, we were in the store. We didn't handle as many masks because we had such a terrific time keeping people from stealing.
Oh dear.
We'd put them behind the counter and somehow or other they would always get in and steal a bunch.
Or have occasion to supply people who might be coming up from outside and doing work, either a scientific expedition or maybe a movie crew working out in remote areas. Did you ever supply them?
We supplied it. Disney, several different summers, or even in the winter, we sent them groceries. They picked everything up because it was one of Disney's deals that he did not allow them to kill animals to feed their dogs that they had. So they bought meat and everything and shipped it up and fed it to them.
So they actually came in, when the crews would come into town, they would make arrangements with you?
With us.
On a face-to-face basis?
Yes. And then they would write in or call in, and we would send them mm-hmm. what
so,
they wanted.
What time period was this, in the 60s or so, or 70s? Or was it earlier than that?
It was earlier than that. I don't know just exactly mm-hmm. how long he did. He had made several movies. And we supplied them. There was women up there and men and whole mm-hmm. big party. And Disney made all the arrangements for feeding them.
Mm-hmm.
And he would not allow them to kill any animals, so they couldn't go hunting and get in.
Anything. It all had to be what came from your store.
Yeah, it had to all come be shipped in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So really, a lot of your business was remote location.
Yes.
Supply. Mm-hmm. And did that continue with some of the pipeline activity?
Oh, yes, a great deal. We had, Lindy was very, very good at packing things. Of course, in the later years, we didn't have to worry as much about it. But when we first started doing it, when we did it for Disneyland, they used to push it out of the plane.
Oh!
And we shipped eggs and everything.
And they didn't end up with scrambled eggs.
They didn't have it. They said they never had a broken egg.
Oh, that's a real packing feat.
Well, he was very good at packing. And Don, the one that came in here to take the dog for a walk.
Oh, Don Kirshner,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Well, he worked for us for as I said, a long time, and Don did a lot of packing for the British. That was one of the things that he did mostly, was packing. We did the packing in the basement of the store, and we had, what do you call them, where they could put their packages that they packed, and it would take them out to the, where the truck would be
parked. Oh, kind of a dolly? Or
not a dolly, no. Just a, I know the name. And you just put them on, and it's a chain belt deal, and it would take them.
Oh, sort of a conveyor belt?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Kind of that idea. Oh. Mm-hmm. So
we had that at both ends of the store, so that we could take the things out of the basement.
The downtown store. Mm-hmm. So all your packing operations would have been this store. And,
yes.
And the purpose of the college store was just to serve the college community. Mm-hmm. So there really weren't any grocery stores right there when I first came.
No.
Yeah, it's College Inn and Lindy's, and that was it until you came downtown. Safeway was in the old, or where the post office is now, mm-hmm. when I first came to town. I guess with the family business, that as soon as the children can participate, they're part of the operation too. Did your daughters help out in the store quite a bit when they were growing up?
After they were in college, well, even before that, they used to help me with the books, because both of them, at different times, because I had the bookkeeping machine and all that here at the house. I have the basement is fixed up and everything, and I had my office down here. My husband used to say, I've got it fixed wonderful. She can keep the books, and then there's a family playroom on the other, mm-hmm. there. Watch the kids and do the washing.
All the same time.
Down there. So, and both girls at one time or another clerked when they were in college for several years in the store doing some of them. They'd mm-hmm. work all summer at the store.
A mm-hmm. good summer job in between semesters.
And they did just everything there was to do at the store, except they didn't do any unloading of freight and that. The men did that. But, both of them would pitch in once in a while if it was necessary and there was something of that type for them to do, but Lindy didn't approve of that too much. But they worked on the counter, and they helped me with the books, and they helped me with all the office work, mm-hmm. and they stocked shelves, they packed orders.
So they really knew the operation from bottom up.
Yeah.
Yeah, good training, too.
It's good for them. And then they had, they got the, whatever was open job. Was open, like somebody had quit or we had let somebody go or something mm-hmm. before summer, and they got out of school for the summer, then that's the job they did.
Depending on just what the employment situation
was.
So they didn't know if they'd be a stocker or a cashier.
No.
Just depended on the job offering.
Whether they wanted to do books or what? One of the girls says, no, I don't want it. Mother, I want to do something different. I don't want to work on the books with you. And she worked on some other things, and pretty soon she come in, she said, how about letting me come in the office? But we said, no, you bargained to do the other. You do it. You do it this year.
Yeah.
And she did the whole summer.
Mm-hmm.
You have to finish what you started.
That's right. That's good training. So how long did you continue operating the stores?
Well, I closed the stores in 1989. Lindy passed away in 1988, December.
And so, really, by the end of the 80s, then, both stores were closed.
We had sold the one store when Lindy was still alive.
The college store?
Yes, we sold that in 85, and then I had to keep the store open for a year to get rid of the stock. He carried a terrific inventory.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually, I closed at the end of October of
89. Mm-hmm. So you were in business for...
A year.
Well, well, I mean, from the very beginning, the stores, well over 30 years.
Yeah, from 46.
46, yeah. Yeah. So, well, that's really the story of Fairbanks businesses, the small, locally operated and owned family businesses. Mm-hmm. And I guess it really was the core of the community. Everybody knew one another, and it was...
I will tell you a story that could never happen now.
Oh, I'd like to hear it.
We had the store, and this night somebody left the door open. When we got to work in the morning, we didn't have any call or anything. Why, here on the counter was a sheet of paper written on it of what they took, added up, and the money laid on that sheet. Sure. Then here comes another sheet. They said the door was open and we came in. We think you must be going to get here pretty soon. We had a break-in at the store that my girls remember very well. The man went in through a window and he felt that, evidently, that the plywood that we put on top of the freezers at night would be steady, a good place to jump down from the window, which he did. But the plywood was a little bigger than the top of the freezer, and he jumped and landed on that, and it threw him, and it threw him into the ketchup shelves. And there was ketchup all over, and we went down there early that morning, and... Well, actually, it was what you'd call night. We went down, we had the two girls, we'd been out, and we went into the store, and here was this, they thought, blood all over everything. And this man had evidently hurt himself quite badly, you know, being thrown like that. And he went over, got out again, and he went down. We had a warehouse that we had there at that time. Just a few lots down from the store, and he went down there and he broke in the warehouse then. And he went in the warehouse, the door, I don't know how, he broke in, and then he couldn't get out.
So he had this trail of cats up on there.
And he was pounding on the door to the warehouse saying, "Somebody let me out." And the police let him out.
And put him back in.
But it was always kind of funny. And my youngest daughter, said, I just thought it was, sure it was blood and it was all over that one side. But you can imagine.
What a mess that would have been cleaning.
Well, it's kind of fun to catch the guy.
Yeah, I say he certainly would have left his trail.
Yes.
Well, I've enjoyed talking to you very much, and thank you for sharing your early years in Fairbanks with me, as well as your business years, too.